Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations here, you're more than welcome. Our phone numbers, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Put aside for a moment the issue of the federal government shutdown and the fact that national parks, including Crater Lake, are closed. Just imagine working near Crater Lake. Even on a hard day at work, you're working hard by one of the most breathtaking scenic areas in the country. The deep blue water, the majestic mountain peaks, the wildlife. It's enough to inspire even those of us who are lousy with crayons to art, which probably explains why there is an artist-in-residence program at Crater Lake. And the artist-in-residence for this fall is a Southern Oregon University professor named John Solinger. John, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have, I see, 2 degrees in forestry and a PhD in genetics. So how did you end up doing art?
I think I've always had art in me. My earliest memories of grade school were about art. I've always kept art somewhere in my life, mostly as a hobby. And it wasn't until about four or five years ago that I decided I'm going to do art more seriously.
So you had been doing it in bits and pieces
as hobbies,
through the years,
yeah,
as a hobby.
Over the years.
It looks like you've got years of experience behind you. You brought one of your mosaics in here, and it's quite impressive, a field full of flowers. The technique is mosaics, then?
It's mosaics because they're made of pieces of glass that are then glued onto a substrate.
Mm-hmm. Did you start with any other format? Did you try to start with painting or drawing or
anything
else?
A few years ago, I used to do sand paintings. I did about half a dozen acrylic paintings. We're talking about decades ago. Mm-hmm. So I've always dabbled a little bit. I did I made some tiles within the last 10 years. And then I had stained glass left over from when I did stained glass windows, about half a dozen of those. And then my wife and I decided to take a local mosaic class in the morning, 2 Saturday mornings in a row, and I was hooked.
Really? There's 2 Saturday mornings of uh-huh. mosaic class and you got to this point. Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive. You had this in you, clearly, for a long time. And other than that, though, apparently not much training in art?
No training whatsoever.
All right. So has this become something of an obsession with you, working on mosaics?
I'm obsessed, yeah. In fact, I like to tell people I'm possessed now. I went beyond obsession to possession. Yeah, it runs my life. Everything evolves around my mosaics.
I noticed some jokes in another interview about how you wish people would leave the house when they're visiting and you don't answer the phone and stuff like that.
That's true. Yeah.
That's not just hyperbole.
Well, that's not unusual for artists. When they get into their studio, they like to block everything else out, and that's really what I do. And I am so obsessed with it now that everything boils down to my mosaics.
So your field of study, generally biology then, and so was it just a natural transition to go from working in biology to working on mosaics that depict nature and wildlife?
I think the only thing that the biology did for me is to put me in a position to understand the mechanisms of biology, the underpinnings of biology. I'm a developmental biologist, geneticist by training, and pattern formation was where I put my research efforts. And so pattern is a big part of what art's about too. So it's not that great of a leap.
And so some of the elements of composition and stuff, I mean, do you freehand the mosaics?
I base my mosaics off images. And mm-hmm. so when I was at Crater Lake, that's what I did. I took lots of images of potential future mosaics. Just based off photographs that I take. Mm-hmm. I'll take them and crop them or use Photoshop to otherwise change them around to my liking, and then I print them, and then they're the basis from which I do my mosaics.
So does it sort of end up like glass by numbers or something where you're laying in over the picture? Or does it get a little more freeform?
I think that's
that?
Probably a good way to put it, but that's really not the way it is, because when you look at a photograph, any kind of little circle that you look at, it'll have multiple colors in it. So it's not like, okay, here's a dime-sized area that's got yellow and green and blue in it. So how do you put a piece of glass on there that's yellow, green, and blue? So it's not quite that easy. Each piece is a separate decision.
Well, so that does bring up a question, though. What we're looking at is this field of flowers, and the petals look like they could be individual pieces of glass, but it looks
they
like
are.
Because of the shading that each of them are actually several individual pieces of glass.
They can be. It's both.
So do you spend a lot of time breaking the glass into smaller chunks?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I spend a lot of time chewing it up, yep, and I'll do it to music sometimes, to the beat.
What's your preferred music for this?
I like country music. Jason Aldean and I can't think of his last name, Ryan.
Kind of a good stomping country beat, good breaking the glass music.
Yeah, it's just gives me rhythm.
So you mentioned the technique was to get some images already and then overlay this. So how long a process is this? I mean,
this is the only one I've actually kept track of, mm-hmm. Time-wise, and it took me 240 hours total.
240 hours.
Right. So 6 weeks if I worked 40-hour weeks,
week,
but
yeah.
I can't work on it like for 8 hours straight. So it was extended over months, but 240 hours.
Wow.
And it's, what, 16 by 20 inches. It's not very big.
And so what is the largest piece you've ever worked on?
2 feet by 3 feet. It was probably a seminal piece for me. It was a copy of a mosaic. A painting by Van Gogh, his irises. And it took me over a year to do it for a number of different reasons. And once I was finished, I said, I have to do this. I can do it, and I'm going to.
All right. So how many pieces do you have going at one time, or is it just focusing
on one? I have tried
three,
but I can only do two or three a year total. But three didn't work. I started scavenging, taking pieces off one to work on another, so I end up doing just one at a time.
John Solinger is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a Southern Oregon University professor and this fall's Crater Lake Artist in Residence. And yes, he did manage to get his work in before the shutdown of the federal government, which does affect the national parks. We'll talk about that further in our Vince Day segment. If you'd like to talk about John, about his artwork, and about his experience at Crater Lake, give us a call, 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So how did the appointment at Crater Lake come about?
You have to apply for it. I apply for a lot of different competitions and exhibits, and I'd wanted to try a residency, so I applied for it. This year, their theme that they asked the artist to address was climate change, and it just so happened I was working on a mosaic that dealt with climate change.
And what was the context of it?
The mosaic itself is an image of snow melting, and it's got a magpie that's situated at an elevation of 1,000 feet higher than they normally occur here in the valley. So I put it up at 4,000 feet. It's actually an image out of the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. So magpies currently don't occur there, but with global warming, the idea is that those animals that are mobile will move up in elevation. So I placed a magpie in a field that represents the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. So I think that kind of helped me segue my way into this artist in residency.
So for the folks who don't really understand what a residency is, I mean, what are some of the requirements you have to fulfill and what are the things you get in return?
The residencies at national parks are different from each other. So this is totally different than the other residencies at other national parks. Some national parks require that you leave a piece of artwork there that you created or that you created within the last or a year following the residency. There's no such requirement at this one. What they basically do is give the artists a stone house that's in the visitor center of Crater Lake National Park. It's probably about 800 square feet. It was built in 1930 to 1941, somewhere in that period. So it's quite a comfortable place. It's got internet, and it's quite isolated also. So it's a chance to get away from the phone. It couldn't get away from the internet because of there, but there's no TV. There aren't a lot of people, so there's lots of chances to do art.
But a lot of it, you said, was photography, just taking
because
pictures
the way I do my mosaics is I put all the pieces down. Sometimes there's thousands of them, and I don't glue them until I'm totally done laying the pieces down. So I couldn't do that in Crater Lake. So at Crater Lake, I just went around taking images that will serve as references for future mosaics.
And how long again up at Crater Lake?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Were they some of the best 2 weeks of your life?
They're some of the most interesting 2 weeks of my life. Being alone like that is not always easy, and I do like to be alone a lot myself, not only with my art, but just in normal everyday. I'm self-contained quite well. But up there, 2 weeks was quite a bit. Lots of time to reflect, lots of time to read.
Mm-hmm. Lots of time for everything, it sounds like,
yeah.
Right? And I can imagine, though, why you didn't want to take the actual workings of the mosaics up there. It sounds like it could be quite a mess. I mean, what is your working area, your studio look like?
I've got a two-car garage that I use,
uh-huh.
And I'll take as much space as I can. Again, it wasn't so much the space issue, it was just my mode of operation is I lay the pieces down, and I couldn't do it in 2 weeks.
So you lay the pieces down, but no gluing until the end. You really
Correct.
Want to make sure everything is exactly finished. So by the time you're finished working on this, I can just see you in there with tweezers laying in little individual pieces of glass.
And sometimes I drop the tweezers and my mosaic gets ruined, but that's part of the process.
So then you pick the tweezers back out and put everything back where
right.
it was.
And I like to tell myself it's better than it was before.
That's a comforting thought, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's my own procedure. It's nobody else does it this way.
You talked about counting the hours on the one in this room, which is how big again? 16 by 24?
16 by 20 inches.
16 by 20. So is the roughing in, I mean, is that done after maybe a week or so, I mean, of work or something?
My procedure is very much like a painter. Not that I've done much painting, but I've seen videos of it. And I put if I might have in my hand some yellow, and I'll put a little yellow here, a little yellow there. And then I kind of, I never finish anything in one section. I just kind of do the whole thing. As opposed to most mosaicists, we'll start, for example, at the top and then just work on down, and by the time that they're at the bottom, they're finished, whereas I work all over the place.
And there's a process here, I understand, where you actually flip the whole thing over in one...
Twice.
Twice.
Right.
Okay.
I flip it over, add a adhesive to a substrate, put it on the back side of the flipped mosaic, and then flip it back one more time.
That sounds like a couple of chances for disaster.
Yes, it is. And my wife can attest to some of the problems I've had.
Some interesting words come out of the two-car garage about that point,
yes.
I'm thinking.
Yes, indeed.
So given how small some of these pieces of glass are and how jagged the edges, I have this image of you with Band-Aids on your fingers during the entire time you're working on a mosaic. Is that what happens?
That's a common comment made by people. I don't get cut very often. I'm pretty good at just putting my hand into a bucket with glass and picking pieces up and not getting cut. I don't know why.
You're a lucky man. Tell us about the prestige that came with the Artist in Residence program. And you have won another award or two, I guess.
I've won lots of awards.
Okay.
With this mosaic that you're seeing here, I won Best of Show in an international competition. And that sent me through the roof. And ever since then, that was 2010. And ever since then, that's been my life.
Your feet have not touched the earth.
They've not touched the ground. I don't expect them to either.
So where do you move to from here? I mean, you need to finish some of the stuff that you took images of at Crater Lake. How many images do you think will become mosaics out of that two-week residency?
Oh, that would be just a total guess. Since it takes me a year to do two or three total, and I have some in the works already, I probably won't be getting to them for another year or so. And if I like what I see, I took thousands of images, and if I see three of them, that would be great.
Three, okay. And
well, there's no magic number. I'm always taking images.
There are a fair number of things on your website, which I want to give to the folks at home. It's roguemosaics.com, roguemosaics.com, and we'll put a link on our Facebook page as well. Seem to be a lot of still life, flowery sorts of things like what's here in the studio with us. And you mentioned the magpie. Do people ever appear in your mosaics?
Ah, interesting question, because... the work that I'm currently working on has a human figure, a nude, with fire. And the reason I'm doing this one is because I've decided to marry my two loves, mosaics and fire ecology. And I challenged myself about a year ago to do it the human form because I've been told that that's the most difficult to do. Most people have a good eye for what a body should look like. And so... So that's what I'm working on. So the current work that I'm doing, it has a male nude with a fire, and the idea is I'm investigating the role of man and fire together. So man has a lot to do with the fire ecology of this planet, and especially in this part of the country where fires are historically very important and, of course, suppressed by people.
So the old biology professor never gets very far from the artwork here, does he?
Right. Oh, well, no.
All right. John Solinger, thanks so much for joining us today in the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you. John Solinger was the artist in residence at Crater Lake for this fall. Managed to get his work done just before the government shut down at Crater Lake, which will be one of the topics in our Vents Day segment. Coming up right now, Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 2nd of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Graham Greene, the novelist born in Berkhamsted, England, 1904. He was An avowed atheist, he'd been questioning his faith since boarding school. When he was 21, he wrote an essay referring to Catholics as people who worship the Virgin Mary. And he got an indignant reply from a young woman named Vivian Darrow Browning, explaining that Catholics did not worship the Virgin Mary. They venerated her. He wrote back to her, and the two of them met, and Green fell in love with her. She was a very devout Catholic, and she had other eligible men who were seeking her hand. But Green was stubborn. He wrote her no less than 2,000 letters and postcards, and he converted to Catholicism and married Vivian and went on to write novels about characters struggling to reconcile their faith with the rest of their lives. His novel, The Power and the Glory, came out in 1940 about an old Mexican priest who calls himself a whiskey priest, who lives a life of drinking and adultery, and at the end of his life, he's living on the run, practicing his faith, even though the new revolutionary government has outlawed Catholic sacraments. And it's the birthday of Wallace Stevens, born in Reading, Pennsylvania, 1879. Thought about becoming a journalist, but he got a degree in law instead and took a job with the Hartford Accident and Indemnity Company, where he worked his way up to vice president. He was in charge of inspecting surety claims. A colleague of Stevens's said he was a very imaginative claims man. He was the dean of surety claims men in the whole country. Each day, Wallace Stevens walked 2 miles between his home and his office, and during these walks to and from work, he composed poetry. His first collection, Harmonium, was published when he was 43. Stevens said, after one has abandoned a belief in God, poetry is that essence which takes its place as life's redemption. Here's a poem for today by Wallace Stevens, A Postcard from the Volcano. Children picking up our bones will never know that these were once as quick as foxes on the hill, and that in autumn, when the grapes made sharp air sharper by their smell, these had a being breathing frost. And least we'll guess that with our bones we left much more, left what still is the look of things, left what we felt at what we saw. The spring clouds blow above the shuttered mansion house beyond our gate, and the windy sky cries out illiterate despair. We knew for long the mansion's look, and what we said of it became a part of what it is. Children, still weaving budded aureoles, will speak our speech, and never know, will say of the mansion that it seems as if he that lived there left behind a spirit storming in blank walls, a dirty house in a gutted world, a tatter of shadows peaked to white, smeared with the gold of the opulent sun. Wallace Stevens' poem, A Postcard from the Volcano, from his collected poems, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.